Welcome back to this Razor's Edge podcast. I'm Gareth Armstrong, and this series is all about building a sales team in an entrepreneurial business. This is our eighth episode, and it wasn't meant to be our eighth episode, but it is our eighth episode. Why? Because, well, we keep on extending and expanding and discovering new things as we go along, because that's just how it seems to work with you, Alon.
Yeah, well, it seems to work with all entrepreneurs that way. We have a plan, and then life happens, and so deal with it, Gareth. If you think this was a 10-part series and you made plans for the 11th week, well, deal with it.
Yeah, make a plan. Make a plan we have. So what actually has happened, as a reminder, is in the previous episode, we were discussing they need to be trained. And we needed to separate it out, to ventilate it, so that we could distinguish between two parts of what we were discussing. The method, the how, and then the content, the what. Mm-hmm. Today we're talking about the content. Alon, you've got a nice list there in front of you. What's on the list for today that we're going to be discussing?
So what we're going to talk about today is, in terms of the content, is content around the company, the content around the industry, which is often forgotten, the content around the department, how the department works, and finally the actual role. And then perhaps more specifically around just how to sell, actually sell.
So if I'm hearing you right, and I'm thinking about potential training programs and sometimes how simplistic people make it, where it's just, as you've said before, as you said in the previous episode, here's a brochure, here's some business cards, go out and sell. Mm-hmm. What we're doing here is we're really bringing them from a macro view down to a personalized interaction potentially. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is. And to think about this as a curriculum, and when we think about developing a curriculum, we probably break out into a cold sweat. And once again, I want to emphasize that this is a journey that you need to go on as an entrepreneur building your business, where you're building out that curriculum piece by piece. But rather think about this as a framework for your curriculum and have a skeletal view of it, as opposed to just dealing with one area. Rather cover all of these areas in a skeletal way and slowly over time add meat to that skeleton in order to build out a fully fledged sales training curriculum, which encompasses all the areas I spoke about.
Well, if I think about the method, which part of that method is to be shadowing someone. Mm. In that shadowing process, maybe you notice that there's a repeated need or necessity for certain kinds of content to be brought in. That's what you're saying here.
Yeah.
Keep it simple and then add the meat as you go along, as you see the needs arise or as the needs become apparent to you.
If I share with you something that happened to me yesterday, I did training on a part of a new product, and it wasn't even to the sales team, it was to the people who would be implementing. Because it was the first time I had trained it and I had beautiful slides created and I had been very thoughtful, there were two things that were happening. There was somebody else in the room, and I know that I'm spoiled now, but there was somebody else in the room taking down all the notes so that there were notes added to my slides, and she was actually going to take over from me to be the person to train that. So she was in the room taking down the notes. I will then subsequently meet with her afterwards, once she's written all the notes, to check to see that they were accurate and she's understood it correctly. And then, so that was going on. The second thing that was going on, I had a book open with a pen, and every time there was a question or I don't get that, I would write down what the audience didn't understand. And then literally last night went back into the slide deck and improved it based on my session yesterday. So that continuous improvement, but it's an openness and understanding, and I was okay to not be perfect in my first time I'd ever trained that. I was okay with it because I knew I would evolve, and I was quite open with the implementation team. I said to them, look, this is my first time I'm training this. If there are any gaps, let's just discuss them, and I would rush back to the podium where I would write down the gaps that they had picked up or I had omitted, and last night then filled that in. And then there's 100% going to be other iterations on that training over time. And eventually in a few years time when I'm not training that, it will evolve even without me. And it will become far meatier and far more pertinent to how the particular product has evolved over time. And that's an important statement there, is that all your content is not static, even if it's perfect in the moment, if there's such a thing. It cannot be static because it relates to things that are evolving. So it has to evolve. The content needs to evolve with the thing that you are training.
Yeah, as basic as now click on this widget here to do that, as basic as user interface change, all the way through to fundamental things about perhaps the product and the way it's delivered. I mean, it could be anything, but that's what you're describing.
When we changed our logo, all our training content slides had to change.
Mm.
It was before AI. Somebody had to go and change all the logos.
And speaking of change, the first thing that you choose to train your new sales team on is the company.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start there and let's work our way through this list of training content and material.
When a salesperson goes out to sell your product, they represent your company. And questions like, how long has your company been around? What else does your company do? What does your company do? Are there divisions? All those kinds of things are very often asked in the sales process. And so it's very important that the sales team know what they're representing, which company they're representing, and the history, and understand the purpose of that business, the methodologies it uses, the differentiators it has, the competitive environment, all those things relating to the company. So all our staff, including the sales team, goes through understanding the company that they represent, because it's not just in the sales environment that people represent a company. It could be we've got a training department, and in the training department, when somebody's standing up in front of a class, they are representing the company and what we stand for. We do touch on values, but it's more around like what we stand for. What is our raison d'être? What are we trying to do in the world? What's our mission in the world? How successful have we been? There's a sense of pride and connectivity that you want your team to have to the organization. Now, in the beginning, you don't have a brand. You don't really have a long history, but you do have a purpose. You do have a reason to exist, hopefully. And so what you're trying to do in a small environment is you're trying to connect your sales team to that purpose. If you don't have the history, if you don't have the brand, if you don't have all the other things that bigger businesses have.
And by virtue of connecting the sales team to that purpose, they're connecting the client to your purpose, and hopefully your purpose is to solve some of their problems and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was just reflecting on a journey of learning on the job training, so to speak, because I got wrapped over the knuckles for it. I was a part of an organization in quite a senior role, but not a sales role, marketing role.
Mm-hmm.
And myself and the CEO went to a client and we were busy. And I've got a competitive nature. But the organization and the way that it was positioned, they don't want to be seen as competing in the industry that they're in. They want to be collaborative. They want to hold hands and with the other competitors, really, in the industry and lift together. And here I am with my competitive language. And this is the kind of thing that I would imagine is trained at this point.
Correct. And language is actually part of the training. I mean, Race Corp's got a Race Corpedia where we train our staff on how to speak Race Corp, which is a complex language. I mean, I could say a statement now, which is, straight after silver, there was a cyan where we discussed the indigos. And the first thing that we did was in that meeting was discuss the ambulances. Now, I've said a completely rational statement in Race Corp, but you and everyone else don't really understand what I've just said. And this is not a route around creating jargon, but this is around creating culture as well. And so there's a common language within Race Corp, and things that are not easily described in one word can be consolidated into one word which describes quite a complex thing that is perhaps not understood in another environment. So even part of the company training is training language and how we name things and how we think about things in this organization. So it's not just around our purpose, it's also around our language.
So if there were two or three points that you would say you must hit when you're talking about the company, what would they be?
Definitely number one is our purpose. Why are we here? Number two is you have to understand why the founders founded the business, which is relates to the purpose. But often there's a story behind the purpose. You know, I was looking for this product. I couldn't find the product. And so I saw a gap in the market. I was having that problem, everyone else was having that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of story. So you're trying to connect also the founding story into that.
And story, by the way, is very powerful as a tool, as a mechanism for bringing someone into a conversation, bringing them full cells, you know, their imagination. They may relate in many cases. And so storytelling is a very important tool as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've a little further down the line. So we've got the history of Race Corp as a booklet telling the story of how Race Corp started and how certain things that we do precipitated and why they precipitated. So there's a deeper understanding of that. And then we actually do an assessment on that. So we test to see that they know why things existed and where they originated. So, and then language. I think language is critical.
Okay, so we've trained company. Where do we go from here?
Okay, so you probably thought we should have started at a more macro level, at a higher level than company, which is industry. And there's a reason why we start with company first and industry second, because I want them to relate first. I want to anchor them to what they're representing and then put them into the context. So you are now representing Race Corp. Race Corp stands for this within this context. So now we go to the context that they're in, which is the industry. So how does the industry work? Who are the stakeholders in the industry? Who are the big influencers in this industry? Who are the competitors in the industry? Who are the suppliers in the industry? What is the legal framework that governs this industry? What's happened in this industry in the past? Where is this industry moving? Are we in a mature industry? Are we in a startup industry? All those kinds of things. So now AI being so topical, if we were in an organization that was in the AI space, we would talk about how this industry is formulating, right? And once again, to our initial point at the start of this podcast, that's evolving at a huge rate. So this piece of the industry would need to be updated probably weekly, you know, in terms of when your new people are coming into the organization, because the industry is moving quite fast. Whereas in a mature industry, you might not need to update the content that often because it doesn't move that quickly. But you're trying to build the framework in which they operate and understand if they're going to be a strategic salesperson, they have to understand the industry in which they work and the players and the layers and the categories of clients. And I was quite I just want to talk about here about something that happened to me this week. I was talking to an entrepreneur who is in the cleaning space, right? And he's a successful entrepreneur, and it became very clear to me why he's successful, because you've got this whole thing, I get a contract to clean a building. And he was, well, actually the industry is quite broad. There's vehicle cleaning, there's industrial cleaning, there's commercial cleaning, there's household cleaning. And he like broke down the industry to me about these eight areas within the industry that required cleaning and were all quite distinct and all had different dominant players in each of those categories, and how he competed in each of those and how the product was different in each of those categories. So me as a layman in that space that knows nothing about the cleaning industry sort of went, well, you got dirty things and then you clean them. I was quite like with a broad, blunt.
Yeah, a mop, a broom and vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not like that. And you can't go, for example, into the motor vehicle space and just use, you know, sunlight to clean. You need something that doesn't strip the paint. So your chemicals are different in that environment. Now, I don't think about that. And so if I was a salesperson joining that industry, I would need to know the different categories of cleaning. I would need to understand the nuances and the different products that were available in each of those categories.
Yeah, I mean, I can just imagine being a salesperson in that industry, fresh, new, a little bit green, and not being able to pick up nuance from a client that I'm trying to win over, because they're talking about certain things which are words that clearly indicate that they want their windows cleaned, and I'm thinking about carpets. But that's just because I haven't been trained this way.
This might not relate, but it reminds me, I wrote a book called Lose the Business Plan, and one of the impetus pieces there was I came across a business plan that landed on my desk around the printing industry, and the organization that put it together got students to go and do research on industries and put business plans together following a template on behalf of a third party, which was the client. But the student, a 20-year-old, knew nothing about that industry, did internet research. And so they were talking about a business plan for a litho paper printing. But in the research document, it spoke about the industry being like $1 billion or $1 gazillion big and comprised of tear printing, this printing, that printing, a whole. They didn't even know what litho printing was. And they had no understanding. So the market that they had put into this business plan had nothing to do with litho printing, which was what they were looking to raise money to get these litho printers. And in fact, they even included embroidery into this business plan, which has got nothing to do with that. And so if you come as a salesperson and don't understand the printing industry and you arrive at a client and you've got no clue about how that industry works and the different types of printing, you're not going to sell.
Well, I can immediately now understand why you start by training on company first, because your company is inserted into that environment.
Yes.
Supplies very specifically into one of the categories or verticals or something in that environment and is treated a certain way in that environment and offers other things in that environment that other people don't. So I can see exactly why the steps are company first, then the industry. But then what happens after that? Sorry, I've cut you short there. I hope that's okay.
No, it was the right place to cut me. Now we move to department, how the department works. And department is quite interesting because all departments work differently. They've got not just in terms of their different processes, how they work in terms of the workflow in those departments, but also there's different culture, different purpose in different departments, and different organizational structure. Some might have two managers, some might have three, some might have one, some might have three layers, some might have no layers, etc. So you have to understand the department in which you're working and who's who in that department and who you rely on and who relies on you, and how does it all work in your department? Because if I know how the company works, but I land up in the department and I mess up and I don't know what to do in this department, it's going to take me a long time to work it out. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to make avoidable mistakes. And the whole idea, remember, we've spoken about, is getting you up to speed in 90 days, getting you up to speed in 3 months. In 3 months, you need to be fully operational as an employee, and that includes the sales team. So if I can tell you how it works in the department, I can tell you about the culture, I can tell you what works and doesn't work in this department, who we rely on in the department, and then intra-department, which departments rely on us and which departments we rely on.
Yeah, dependencies and codependencies and.
All that. Where to go to get things done so that somebody's not sitting and saying, I don't know. So you want to capture all that and make it very clear to the individual that they know how to operate in their immediate micro context. That then moves us to the next level, which is the role. And the role of a salesperson, what is my role? What do I have to do in this role? And that includes things like my rhythm. Every Monday I've got a sales meeting from...
I'm going to interrupt you quickly. Surely this is in a document somewhere that, you know, they've already signed.
Not all of it. A lot of it they would have read and understood. And everything, by the way, that I'm speaking about should get to a point of documentation where it's in some form of training material or another, whether the training slides or it's actual manuals or something to that effect where they can read it. But you still have to train it. You still have to have, in my opinion, the verbal interaction with the individual, whether it's digital or it's face-to-face, which I prefer. You still have to have that training. You want to make sure that they do understand it. If they don't understand, you can pick it up on their face. You can see the confusion on their face and you can say, so Gareth, I can see you're battling with that. Just tell me what you're battling with and let's just make sure that you do understand that. So the role is very much based on my responsibilities, my targets, my rhythm. And there's two types of rhythm, my internal meeting rhythms, sales meeting on Mondays, perhaps staff meetings, one-on-one with my line manager, team meetings once a whatever. So I'm a fay with all those things. And then secondly, the reporting rhythm. I might have to do a weekly report or a monthly report. What is the structure of the report? Take me through the template of that report. Where do I get the information for the report? What is deemed accurate and not accurate, etc., etc. Then there's the mechanical side to that role. How do I use the CRM system within the sales environment? I need to be trained on that within the role. Now, you might have certain people within a department that don't require a license for a CRM, and others do. So it's not just that everyone in the sales team uses the CRM. It's probably most of them, but not everyone. So down to how do I use the software in my role? Logons, passwords, all those kinds of things need to be trained in.
So if you were to pick, again, just three critical things at this particular point, what would you pick for three critical things that have to happen in this step?
In role. Targets, what is expected of me to achieve, for me to fully understand that. Rhythm, in terms of my meetings and reporting. And then the administrative part of that role, the boring stuff that generally we get wrong, to know how the administrative stuff works within that role.
Let's just recap very quickly. We've trained on the company. We then trained on industry. From industry, we went into department, which included a little bit of interdepartmental nuance as well. And then we went all the way down to the role. Does it end there? Is there more to it?
Yeah, there is. And specifically within the sales environment, it's actually ensuring that they can sell. Now, one would assume when you bring in a salesperson and you've interviewed them and they've got a history of selling, that they can sell. But I wouldn't leave that completely up to chance. And there's ways of selling. And you might find that a certain style of selling in one environment doesn't work in another environment. So there's always an adaptation of how you sell in a certain environment. Let me give you a very easy example. You might have a long sales cycle in your industry. People make decisions once a year. That person comes from an environment where they were selling in retail. So they've got great interpersonal skills, all the wonderful things that salespeople should have. But they're not used to a long sales cycle. They don't understand the steps in a long sales cycle relative to where they've been in the past.
I mean, that could even influence the way that they feel about themselves as a salesperson. You know, they could feel like a failure, but actually they're on top of the world. They just don't know it yet because the decision is 6 months away. The decision is going to be positive, but they can't process it.
Yeah, because they're so used to a quick turnaround and in terms of feedback and close or not close. And now they're in a different environment with different processes and maybe different people within the organization that need to sign off on that sale. And once again, if I was in the mining industry, perhaps the mine engineer needs to sign off. Whereas if I'm in the food industry, the chef needs to sign off or something. You know, it's different in every industry. So I need to know how to deal differently with a mine engineer, which might be far more clinical and far more empirical in terms of how they make decisions versus in the food industry, they might be more emotive. And so there's a different sales technique and a different way to approach a chef. I'm not saying that this is true, but I'm just trying to give a possible example here that a chef might be more emotive in decision-making versus an engineer that might be more clinical in making a decision. So you would approach the sale slightly differently between the two. That would need to be trained in. And then we move to, I think, a very important tool that can be used in this environment, which is case studies. To develop case studies that are simulated. So what I do with also with my team and when I work with other entrepreneurial businesses through the entrepreneur is to encourage them to develop case studies which are typical of the kind of objectionable environments that sales teams find themselves in. So they would create, this is the situation. Gareth is the FD. It's coming to financial year end. He's overspent. And so-and-so is the CEO. They're in the room. They are going to go to a board meeting and they're responsible for ensuring that whatever you're selling is in place. And you've got these two people who are in conflict with one another and there's an incumbent in place and you have to sell. Go for it. You've got 10 minutes to sell.
So you are promoting the demo. You're promoting the actual role play.
Role play, exactly. The simulation of this. And so then you would get the salespeople. And if you've got more than one, the others to observe. If I was a salesperson, I'd then have to go through the sales process. Those other two people would act their roles. And then afterwards, you would, there's a rubric and saying, would I buy from you? That's the bottom line is, you know, did you do this? Did you do that? So you go through some sort of rubric to see that the salesperson actually went through all the different steps that they were supposed to, mentioned all the things that they're supposed to. But the bottom line is, would I buy from you or not? Or would I move you to the next step or not? And then you have a discussion. An open discussion. And, you know, these are not scientific. And you learn from each other.
Yeah, it's someone saying, you know, I actually encountered this just the other day.
Yeah.
And here's how I dealt with it. Exactly. But I failed, but here's how I tried.
Yes.
And I saw you do that, and it was positive here. So I just want to warn you against the fact that this is a demonstration. I had it in real life. It could be that kind of interesting dynamic that is pulled from different people in the team.
But you're opening up the next point, which is very, very important. Salespeople need to sell differently in different environments. It's not just one way of selling. So if you as a salesperson have got certain techniques that work, and I've got techniques that work for me, you find that your techniques work in a certain context and environment, and mine work in a certain context and environment. And what I encourage salespeople who are plateauing or hitting brick walls is to talk with their colleagues and learn their techniques and then try those techniques and almost swap techniques like you swap cards, you know, like that you're swapping these ideas of how to sell and then give feedback on how it worked for them, so that you land up with a salesperson with a quiver full of arrows. Arrows being different sales techniques for different contexts that they can pull out when needed. They can identify and say, oh, I don't sell in that way. This person's in a rush. I'm not going to be storytelling in this environment. This person, you know, is relaxed. I can use storytelling in this environment. This person's got an incumbent. This person's got a crisis. Different technique.
Yeah, I've got something for that. But from a technique perspective.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that is also part of that training, is that we learn from one another. And I have to say that I personally love being in those sessions, because even 20 odd years in my industry, I'm learning from the sales team that I have as they share their techniques, and I go, oh, that I haven't thought of that before, and then I go and try it.
And if we're rolling back a little bit, the environment's changing. Even being 20 years in the industry, how could you know what might be working or not if you're not at the coalface like your sales team now are?
And you've hit such an important note there, because you find that with older salespeople not older as in their age, but from a tenure perspective, that they tend to hold on to old things that worked where the industry has moved. And you might have entered, we spoke about the AI industry. They entered the AI industry at the beginning when no one knew anything about AI. But now it's 10 years later, the industry settled and everyone understands AI and how it works. They're still using old techniques.
Mm.
So it's very important that your tenured people keep up to date with new techniques as the industry evolves as well.
Company, industry, department, and a little bit of interdepartment, role,
and technique.
And in technique. You can see why we need to separate this out into two separate podcasts, method and content. Thank you, Alon, for your insights, and we will be with you again in the 9th installment in this series, which is You Need to Assess Them. Remember to go to racecorp.com, where you can sign up for notifications about this series and other series that RaceCorp is releasing, or alternatively, go and follow RaceCorp on your favorite social media platforms, where you will also see notifications as episodes are released there. I'm Gareth Armstrong, and this has been a Razor's Edge podcast.